Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lob podcast with These Football Times. My name is Stuart Horsfield, and on this edition we've got something a little bit different, something that hopefully every football fan will be able to relate to, certainly something that I'm looking forward to finding out a lot more about. But before we go into detail about tonight's subject and tonight's special guest, I'd like to introduce my two compadres for this evening, which will come as no surprise that the first one is a very smug Mr. Stephen Scragg. Stephen, once more, I assume all is well with the world and life is great for you.
Oh, it's brilliant, Steve. 12 points to go. 12 points to go. Four wins, and with a title party starting around about mid-March, if everything goes well.
So this could be your year then. I'm going to
stick my neck out and say yes. This is going to be Liverpool. Not next year. This year. Okay. Finally.
I'm assuming we'll touch on this more as tonight goes on, especially with the subject, but how is the feeling, because I'm quite interested, obviously living in a city that has no success, what's it like in Liverpool, well, the red half of Liverpool at the moment?
Probably a mix of incredulousness and acceptance now. I think it's got to a point now where that whole nervousness of having, you know, thrown three or four or five league titles away over the course of the last 30 years and then suddenly this one's here, and it has had that understandable kind of like reticence to say yes, it's going to happen. But I think they're that far ahead and that assured of themselves and so sure-footed as well in how they're playing football and just the love of the game as well, because the way they play football is just joyous. And yeah, I think it has just been a drip basis, but now I don't think there's anyone that believes that they can throw it away from this point. And yeah, it is just waiting for the finish line to appear, you know, in front of us now.
It is. I mean, obviously, I know we've got lots to talk about tonight, but I am just a little bit interested in this. How does it feel? And I've got to say, as an outsider looking in, it feels like a procession. Is there any wish that it was a bit more exciting and interesting? Or is this just one of the most enjoyable seasons of all time?
Oh, no, this is just massively enjoyable.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
It's great to take the sweat off, because, you know, we came so close last year. And under Brendan Rodgers, we came really, really close as well. You know, Rafa brought us close. So, you know, I think when this day was always going to come, it would have to be, you know, running away with it. But, I mean, there's running away with it and there's running away with it. They're absolutely, you know, 22 points clear with, you know, so few games to go. You know, I think we've got 11 left to play and we win it in four. You know, we need four victories and nothing can stop them then. And it is, I think just the way that they play and the way that the players are, it's just massively enjoyable to watch.
I'm really pleased for you all. I genuinely am. That sounded awful. I actually am really pleased for you.
No, we don't want anything close. We don't want any nerves. That's it now. Yeah. We just need to blitz this one. And yeah, let's go to the wire when we retain it next year. That's fine. But this year, let's just get that monkey off the bat by winning it by the biggest margin possible.
I know you're not going to care, and I promise for everyone, the other guests, I am really sorry. And I promise, but one last question then. And I don't want to put you on record, but obviously I'm about to. Will you go all season unbeaten then?
I'm going to say no. At some point, they'll take their eye off the ball. There's been a few games of late where it's almost like they're a bit sluggish. What they've done is they've struggled, not struggled, but whenever there's a break in play, be that an international break or this winter break or not playing for whatever reason, then they come back and they're a little bit sluggish. You know, we weren't great at Norwich, but the conditions were a bit wild. West Ham the other night was a bit hurum scurum in an individual game basis. You know, I think someone will catch us on the chin at some point, but, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all for me. It's, you know, go out and win that league title. And once that league title's secured, then, you know, there's another two trophies there that you can win. You know, if records fall, and records are falling, you know, seemingly game by game. I mean, at West Ham the other night, I didn't even realise that, you know, it was a win to equal Manchester City's record of successive victories. It was only after the game that, you know, it was mentioned on the radio when I was in the car on the way home that I realised that, you know, they've just done so many wild things so far this season that it just seems to be every game has this kind of like connotation that, you know, it's a new record for this or it's a new record for that. But yeah, as wonderful as it would be, I think someone will eventually catch us on the chin. And like I say, once you win that title, you know, if we've got like 6-7 games to go, then, you know, I'm sure at some point they're going to take the fuss off the gas.
Okay. All right. My other not quite so happy guest, although obviously the weather, I'm assuming, is probably playing a part in some of his happiness, Mr. Gary Thacker. Gary, obviously last night, as we go to air, we won't mention too much, last night's performance from your team, but...
No, I mean, sometimes, you know, I mean, we've all been there, and when you lose a football match, you have to take on the chin and say the better team won last night. But I just want to say to Stevie, you know, there's 11 games left, and if we take 78 points from those 11 games, there's nothing Liverpool can do to stop us winning the title. All right, buddy, so, you know what I mean? Don't keep chicken... No, I mean let's be honest. Liverpool can prep them the 12 girls team now and coast over the line. And the reason they can do that is because, by far and away, they've been the best team in Europe this season. And, you know, they're going to win it. You don't fluke a league title. You fluke a cup, you don't fluke a league title, and Liverpool will coast this league title because they've been, I say, far and away the best team, not only in England, not only in Britain, but across Europe as well, and, you know, and perhaps even the world. But things change. Nothing's forever, you know. Manchester United fans learned that, and, you know, and I'm a Chelsea fan. Yeah, I learned that. Arsenal fans learned it, and going back, Tottenham fans learned it, and going back through history. Man City fans have learned it. But that's what football's all about. So, you know, you enjoy your triumphs, and you take it.
Yeah, you do. It's football's cyclical. You know, it goes around in cycles.
Well, I don't mean we should have this conversation, buddy, but we always come back to the same conclusion that nothing's forever, mate.
Wow. No. The good thing is that Gary's already planned Liverpool's demise under Jurgen Klopp. So that's all right. That didn't last long, Stephen. So obviously enjoy it while you can.
We need a balance.
So obviously, you know, the reason why we're here, other than, as you can guess, we've not spoken for a while, the three of us. However, tonight we have a far better person than us three on to talk about something far more interesting than we usually chat about. Now, you think about tribal divisions in football, experiences encountered, the passions engendered, the memories that are made by supporters going to games. They're all, you know, uniformly recognisable. But tonight's guest has made it their visual mission to provide an exhibition of images and stories of Liverpool supporters' experiences. Stephen, you're going to love it. Gary, maybe.
I am.
I will. and this project goes by the name of the Red Project. Tonight's guest is Emma Case. Emma, we finally got to you. It's been a while since myself and the guys have chatted, so I apologise for all of that, but welcome to the podcast.
Sorry. Hello, yeah, thanks for having me.
it's all right. Obviously, you'll have enjoyed Stephen's chat about Liverpool and how it's going.
It's weird, actually, for me to be part of sort of a commentary conversation. I never feel quite qualified, but, yeah, I'm getting there, I think, slowly.
That's all right. I mean, obviously, like I said in the intro bit, I'm sure we're gonna talk about Liverpool's current success, even though, as we said, Gary's just planned the early demise of it, so we better hurry up and chat about it. But obviously, you know, Stephen sort of brought you to our attention, although I have seen some of your stuff on social media and stuff as well, but it was Stephen who suggested, you know, you was a guest, and rightly so. But if you can just, I suppose, just tell us as much or as little as you want about what it is that you're doing with regards to the Red Project.
Yeah, okay. So I am, a photographer, but I've been shooting weddings for 10 years, me and my husband. But a few years ago, Dad Jimmy Case released his autobiography. It was quite a few years ago, actually, now. And so I read it and then thought, you know what? I think I want to maybe explore this a little bit. So I just started. I was living in Birmingham at the time, and I was coming up to Anfield and just taking photos of fans. So just sort of stopping them, having a quick chat, taking their portrait. And then, like Scousers do, they start telling you the most incredible stories. And I was like, I need to record these. And I used to take a little tape recorder with me and try and record it, but they were going into the game and it was all a bit rushed. And then I just started to look around the ground and I was like, the whole of Anfield is completely changing, like literally in front of our eyes, like buildings are being knocked down, you know, like the new souvenir shop, the whole landscape has just completely changed. And I just suddenly started to panic and thought, this is going and this is our heritage. And I just, it's to capture it in some way. So I started taking photos of the shops and the area and just the landscape around Anfield. And then I happened upon this project in the Midlands called the Living Memory Project. And it was asking just the general public in the Black Country to send in their own photos. And I'll be honest, I just totally stole that idea. I do know the guy that runs the project. and I just thought, you know what? What would be really nice is to ask fans to send me their own personal photos. And so I set up a bit of a website and I started to sort of put little shout outs on Twitter. And I had in my head what I kind of imagined I could get, you know, like the dream photos. And then as they started slowly trickling in, I was like, I can't swear, but I was I was literally goosebumps all over my arm. I couldn't believe some of the photos that they were sending in. Now, I have an absolute obsession with sort of nostalgia and film photography in particular. And so for me, I mean, I think it's for most people, you know, you have this real kind of affinity with looking back at old photos, you know, like the ones in shoeboxes, and we've all got them, whether they're of holidays or, you know, like camping trips, Christmas. And if you are into a football team, then that's another element to that sort of family history. And so it kind of fits perfectly with my own photography ethos of how I like to work and what I'm interested in. And then in the kind of changing times of football and how it's becoming much more of sort of a global, if I'm going to say it, corporate sort of business, I felt like it needed to be captured and it needed to be preserved and celebrated. Like, a lot of these photos that we've been collecting are probably shown in maybe the odd Facebook group, but that's it. And I just, when I started sharing them on kind of social media, people, the reaction, you could feel it. You can literally feel it coming out the screen. Everyone is so, it's just joyful. It kind of spreads joy and people love to talk about it. People love to reminisce, and nostalgia is a huge sort of stir of emotions. And weirdly, I didn't preempt how the team were going to do, because this, I started this about 3 years ago, but it feels kind of like there's this parallel thing going on at the moment, you know, being able to look back. I think there was something I saw online today about the best team that's ever been. It was sort of the Liverpool team of sort of the mid-70s. And I was like, it's like happening again. And it's a real nice, I don't know, it just seems serendipitous, I guess. So that's where we're at. But it's kind of gone a bit crazy in the last sort of year. So it started off as just the archive. Then I'm sure we'll talk about Madrid in a bit, but that turned into a sort of pop-up exhibition. And then we have now got a crowdfunder that we're about to launch, which is for the renovation of a little vintage caravan. We want to take it on tour around Merseyside, sharing the photos, so they'll be on display in and around the caravan. But then we'll also be asking fans to bring their photos, so we'll scan them inside the caravan, and so it's kind of like an ever-evolving archive. And we're also taking the archive into sort of dementia groups across the city, so sort of giving them a stimulus of sport to talk about, you know, their old memories. My father-in-law has got dementia and he's a Villa fan, and he'll talk about Villa until the cows come home. So it's something that is really, I'm really passionate about, is making the archive useful in different ways, whether that's health, arts, education, just bringing people together, I guess. So, yeah.
Okay, I can see exactly why Stephen suggested that you come on. Stephen and I and Gary, we chat quite a lot, and we are classed as the elder statesman, if you like, of some of these football times groups, and sometimes we get lost, and you're right, nostalgia is a fantastic word. And some of the words that you came with there about, you know, about bringing joy and spreading joy, and obviously before I come to the guys for their initial thoughts, but there's one thing I just want to ask you, Emma, as you were chatting then. Obviously people have sent you photos. Now whenever people ask the question, oh, if there was a fire in your house, what would you save? And after family, it's photographs. And I'm just wondering how much pressure or how grateful or how does it feel when somebody sends you a photograph knowing full well that A, it might be the only one they have, or that they are entrusting you to look after this snapshot, this memory. You know, it's an incredibly, to me, it seems an incredibly personal gift that somebody can give to somebody else, and then with that comes a lot of responsibility to, I suppose, to look after it, to promote it, to make sure it's seen. I don't want to put you under any pressure. I just said all of that, but I'm sure you're aware.
Yeah, very aware. It's been a mixture, actually, because mostly they're sending me images that are scanned. A lot of the images aren't, I'm not physically holding them at all. But actually, some fans have been sending me the actual photo. I've had even scrapbooks sent to me. I've had a lad's college project sent to me that is all about Liverpool Football Club, with sort of old tickets and photographs. And so I have got a few artifacts and sort of photos at home, and it's terrifying. But I want to sort of, this is why I feel like the project now needs to move forward into sort of, I'm turning it into a CIC, the funding's hopefully coming in. So it's something that, and we're kind of dropping the weddings to concentrate on this. So it's like literally jumping in with both feet. I want to look after this legacy, like, and be responsible for it, because I think the fans deserve it, if that makes sense.
Wonderful. No, absolutely, absolutely. Right, I'll let you have a rest and gather your thoughts and take a breath. I'm sorry. Stephen, I'll come to you first. I mean, obviously, you know, Liverpool's your club, and I feel like Emma is doing what must feel like the most wonderful service as a Liverpool fan. And like I say, you and I have chatted a lot on and off about the tradition of going to the game, how it brings culture together, society together, how people form bonds around a football club. And, you know, and you've mentioned it before about sitting next to the same people, then all of a sudden they're not sat in those seats anymore. And, you know, and I suppose what Emma is doing is capturing it for, well, you know, for all time, really.
Yeah, completely. It's a, you know, a snapshot image of a moment in time, a shared you know, experience that people have. And you know, it's mad what football does to you. And it is, it's kind of like we've spoke before about the fella who used to sit in front of me, his season ticket, and I never knew his name, but I always knew him. And we'd embraced so many times over so many big, massive games and goals and all of those. And then he just didn't come back one summer. He, you know, and his brother got to come over and tell me that, you know, he'd passed away. And I remember being, you know, feeling grief for it and stuff like that. And I didn't really know this fella, but I knew him, you know. And it is, it's just these moments in time. And I think people who aren't really into the football and don't really get it, they miss out on so much. You know, I've often said that football fans who are properly invested in it and you know, that they're more in touch with their emotions than you know, many other people, because they feel the spikes of being up and down, you know, in a 90-minute microcosm. And it can be so pronounced. You can be, you know, sky high 1 minute and then in the depths of despair the next, or vice versa. And football is just such a therapeutic thing as well. You know, and yeah, you know, my dad's 82 nearly, and some of the stuff that he talks about, you know, you can forget what he's just done 2 minutes earlier, but you know, he can remember games from kind of like the 50s when he was doing his national service up towards Catterick, and he, you know, he'd tell me stories about getting on the train and going watching Liverpool at Middlesbrough, you know, 59, stuff like that, and I just love those stories. And this is something that Emma's bringing to life, is this. It's that source of memory and you know, shared community, and you know, it's a wonderful thing.
You know, Gary, I know what you're going to say. You know, I know exactly what you're going to say, because you usually come out with a real gem. But this is important, isn't it? Oral history, pictorial history, social history. You know, they are, regardless of whether football is the medium, and obviously Emma's, you know, has picked football as the medium to do this through, but this record of society and this record of a cultural phenomenon that football is in this country, you know, it is so, so important that these things happen, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is, and although I sort of live in Spain now, I grew up in Walsall, just north of Birmingham, so not very far from where Birmingham, were you, Emma?
I was Selly Oak.
Oh, Selly Oak. Oh, my daughter lives in Selly Oak. So, okay. So my childhood was going to Fellas Park to watch Walsall play regularly, and Fellas Park is closed down now. It's now a Morrison's supermarket, and Walsall have moved to the Bescot Stadium, which is, okay, a little bit plastic, but there you go. And so many memories of Fellas Park have gone there. People who went there, people who I stood by for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years as growing up watching Walsall play. And those sort of memories have gone. So things like this, and you know, I know we all think our football clubs are special. And, you know, and Liverpool fans think their club is special, and that's fine. But all football clubs are special. My club is special, your club is special, everybody's club is special. And we all have those sorts of memories. And it's a pity that there's not more people doing the sort of things that Emma's doing, that can sort of preserve the memories and make it available to people to look back on. And it's interesting that Emma said about the dementia benefit of these sort of things. And I know I think it's West Bromwich Albion. I think it is. I'm not sure. It might be Villa. I'm not sure. But I think it's West Bromwich Albion who quite often travel around the old people's home in the area with and take players there. And it's amazing the reaction you see from these people who can't remember so many things that happened recently, but the joy that is clearly apparent when they are sort of prompted to recall football matches of the past. So, you know, it's a wonderful thing you're doing, Emma. So, you know, more power to you, mate. More power to you.
Thank you.
One other thing, Gary. Is there anything going on like this at Chelsea?
Not that I know, absolutely, mate. Who knows? And I guess, you know, before tonight, I didn't know this was going on at Liverpool. So who can say? You know, I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, I'm a long way away from West London at the moment. and there's certainly nothing like that going on at Club Deportivo de Torrevieja just up the road from me. Because you don't want to remember the games they're playing, mate. Believe me. I don't know, but I hope so. And I hope a lot of other clubs are doing this sort of thing. And it doesn't have to be publicised. And, you know, I'm sure, as I mentioned, you know, earlier, I didn't know that Liverpool were doing this sort of thing before this conversation. So perhaps lots of clubs are, and I really hope they are, because it's such a valuable service to the community, to people, to fans, to the football club, to the society.
See, I knew you'd have great answers, Gary. I knew you would. I suppose then, I want to ask you. I want to ask your sort of thoughts on the game as well, Emma. And you know, sort of obviously, I know you know you mentioned your dad, and I deliberately didn't mention your dad because, you know, obviously you're your own guest in your own right, doing your own thing. It wasn't for me to mention it. It was your. You know, if you wanted to, that's fine. But for me, you know, it's Emma on the podcast, and that's it. So I am interested, obviously, in your own thoughts and feelings about football and, you know, how you see the game and stuff. But before I come to that, are you aware of, you know, have any other clubs contacted you? Has anybody else sort of asked for advice on setting one up for other clubs?
I think quite a few clubs have done sort of oral history, like Heritage. A lot of them have had sort of maybe Heritage lottery funding. I think it might be, I don't want to get this wrong, but I think it might be Burnley, I think, might have done a project. And I went to the Sporting Heritage Conference last year, and there's quite a few projects that are going on in sort of a variety of sports, from like rugby to football to sailing, like everything. But a lot of them are sort of maybe like steered from the club itself. So I'm not really sure of any projects that have been started by somebody outside of the club, just independently. And I have had somebody from Spurs get in touch about maybe doing a similar project, which is great. If more clubs could take it up, then and maybe we're kind of like a bit of an experiment to see how it goes to begin with. But yeah, I think it's a really important thing, especially because so many clubs are maybe moving ground or having massive refurbishments, and the whole game is changing anyway, hugely. I think there's a real space kind of now in time, you know, like not really waiting too much longer. So I think, yeah, I think urgency is kind of key. But in terms of my football history, so I was born in Liverpool, but I was kind of like 6 months old when Dad got transferred down to Brighton and then moved over to Southampton. And so for most of my sort of childhood going into sort of early teens, he was at Saints. And so I do really remember going to the matches. Sometimes we'd get to watch, me and my sister, and sometimes we'd be in the players' lounge with all the rest of the kids waiting for him to finish. And then we'd go for a Chinese afterwards. Like, that was our Saturday for a home game. And we would be able to take holidays, like, in the school term because of his, you know, the season. And that was probably about as much as it kind of affected. Everyone at school knew that he, you know, he played football. I did have a lad once say to me, "Oh, you'd make a really amazing girlfriend." Thanks.
I think that's the sort of thing I'd have said.
But around 14, 15, I started playing netball and then started playing football. I played football for sort of Southampton girls for a very brief period of time. Then I sort of found boys and just had a really enjoyable kind of teenage. I really wasn't bothered. I remember Dad having his testimonial at Brighton and sort of was just slightly bored because I just wanted to get back to my mates, whereas my sister fancied Jamie Redknapp at the time and was really happy that he was there. it was weird. It was kind of like normal. It was just normal growing up. And then I don't think I had anything to do with football for most of my adult life. I probably, if somebody had said, "Who do you support?" I probably would have said Liverpool. But I didn't really know the team really well, and I didn't really follow. But I did understand the game. So if I saw anything, I would be like, oh, yeah, I know what's going on. But I wasn't sort of a fan at the time. But since the project, it's like a completely different story. and it's not just because they're doing well, I promise you. I'm not very good with suspense, so I am terrible to watch a game with, but I do really enjoy watching it, and I do get really involved. And now I'm getting there. I can't not watch them now. So I actually would say I'm a fan, and I guess I'm probably so involved in it now. I seem to be talking about football more than anything else.
There's nothing wrong with that. You'll do just fine on here with us.
And it's weird because a reporter got hold of me the other day, which is really random, but I don't think I'm going to speak to them. And he was kind of saying, well, what do you think about, you know, where they're at and stuff? And I look at the sort of human element of the team at the moment. I feel like they deserve it because I want to say their why, and I don't know if you get it, if their why, the reason that they're doing it, their ethos, like going from Klopp, you know, all the way down, you've just got this kindness. And it just seems to kind of, look, I can see a face on here. Oh, I can see your face, you see, so I can see that.
oh, Gary.
There's a definite sort of kindness that I feel like is kind of perforating out. I don't know what the word is. And also the players. I think there's quite a few players in the squad that have... and it might even be because of their religious background or something like that. But I do feel like there's I can't think of anything else but kindness going on. And they seem to really sink together because of that, you know, and they seem genuinely friends and they seem genuinely to get on. And I think that actually makes a difference. So, yeah, that's my opinion. It's not very technical, but I think it does make a difference.
That's all right. All opinions are welcome here. obviously, Stephen, you know, you've watched football and watched Liverpool Football Club for a long, long time, and you've seen a lot of games. Do you recognise what Emma's saying there? Emma makes a great point, which I'm going to chat to Gary about next. And, you know, that's that corporate element and how the game has changed, certainly with the advent of the Premier League and even over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. You know, I know when Sky got involved, it changed, but it seems to have changed again with these massive foreign investments. And I'll chat with Gary about that, because obviously he has a good input on that. But for you, Stephen, as a Liverpool fan, and what Emma's just said there, can you recognise this, you know, this particular version of the Liverpool side, almost not bucking that trend because it is part of this massive corporate thing that football has become, but can you see that this Liverpool side is actually can... You know, the people can relate to it, or the Liverpool fans can relate to them, can relate to the players, can relate to the manager, and there's a real effort by Liverpool Football Club to, you know, again, to relate to the local community, if you like.
I love that I'm making you all talk about kindness.
No, it's good. It's good for us.
Well, no, you know, Emma's right there. You know, there's this great kind of like level of humanity knocking around Liverpool at the minute. And you only have to look at Klopp when he goes on the pitch after the game and the way he embraces his players when they go on and off. You know, the way he pumps his fist towards the cop every time, you know, they've won a game. And there's just this kind of strange aura about Liverpool at the minute that, you know, it seems to me that Liverpool, you know, Klopp, he doesn't just buy players, he buys the personality and the personality of the player. You know, it has to be the person has to fit Liverpool as much as the player has to fit Liverpool. And you know, that was the way when Emma's dad used to play, you know, and that's what kind of like has taken, you know, so many of us by storm, is that it is, there's something so familiar about the Liverpool of the past and the Liverpool of the present. And it is down to that sense of community and humanity, basically. And yes, kindness plays its part in that, because, you know, everything is geared to kind of like, there's a degree of socialism. It's football within socialism, and you know, there's kind of like a helping hand to one another, and there isn't one standout player that dominates the whole landscape. This is a collective. No matter how good so many of the some parts of the collective are, and there are some wonderful players there, it's all about the collective. It's all about the, you know, I hate to cross the word family in football, but it is that collective that powers everything. And there's just this, you know, humanity that powers it.
I mean, you know, Gary, like I said before then, just about, you know, about how much football's changed. And again, Emma made a great point now. Obviously, you're at Stamford Bridge. Emma and Stephen are at Anfield, you know, and your grounds have remained where they've always been. Now, you know, as a Hull City fan, and we moved to from Boothroyd Park to the KCOM. Now, Boothroyd Park was horrendous when you were watching it, when you were stood on crumbling terraces and it smelled, and it was all of those things. And we moved into this wonderful, shiny, new stadium where you were dry and you were safe and you were all of these things. And yet now, what were we, 2003, nearly 17 years later, there's a real desire for images, for people to talk about what it was like at Boothroyd Park. You know, some of the students that I teach, and I talk to them about what it was like when I watched football at their age, and that, you know, they can't get their heads around what it must have been like to stand on terraces. And, you know, obviously for you guys, you've seen your stadium change, whereas myself, we've moved and Boothroyd Park will never be there. It's now a new housing estate. There is absolutely no resemblance of that ground there anymore. And I think what I'm trying to get at Emma's point, you know, now's the time. It, you know, football is changing so quickly and clubs are changing so quickly, almost unrecognisably at such a pace that now is the time to catch it before it's too late.
Yeah, I mean, I think it almost is too late because so many grounds have gone, so many old stadiums that our new stadiums now aren't like they used to be, if that's not sounding too stupidly obvious. I remember, my formative years, we were watching football at Fellows Park, and I used to stand on crumbling terraces. I used to stand leaning up against rusting barriers. We also were in the third division, sometimes in the fourth division. That for the younger generation, that's League One and League Two in new money. You know, we used to have Bovril in plastic cups that were so hot it used to burn your hands. You were hard because you didn't put the cup down. You held the cup. That's how you proved how hard you were. football's changed so much, and you know, even now we're looking at things. You know, we're trying to preserve things that so many other items have slipped away. And it's interesting to hear Steve and Emma talk about Liverpool and, you know, the ethos of the club. And, you know, there's truth in that. You know, there is. But we all think that about our own clubs anyway, and, you know, it's an entropic argument almost that, you know, it's almost true if you're successful. If you're successful, it's true. Because you don't have successful teams that are fighting and arguing all the time, and by the same definition, you know, if you're fighting and arguing all the time, you're not going to be a successful team, so you're going to have that kinship, that sort of fellowship, although in any team there's going to be disputes between players. And, you know, there's an old phrase that, you know, nostalgia is a thing of the past. You know, but it is, but it shouldn't be as well. It shouldn't be. It should be something that's treasured and preserved. And, you know, you mentioned about, you know, Stamford Bridge hasn't changed so much. Yes, it has. Stamford has changed. You know, Anfield has changed so much. I mean, I'm not going to remember when Liverpool were in the second division and Anfield wasn't, you know, anything like it is now. And the football weren't anything remotely resembling what it has been in recent times, or even sort of in the 70s. So. It's important to remember the bad times as well as the good times, because that gives you perspective and you can appreciate things so much better when things improve. But it's also important to remember that, you know, everything's relative, and small successes when you're a lower league team are just as pleasant, just as celebrated, should be just as treasured as Liverpool winning the Champions League last season. Now, it's just as important to Wimbledon, who are preserving resurrecting their club from, you know, being destroyed by money, or lack of money, shall we say. That's just as important, and it should be celebrated in exactly the same way. Is that OK?
Excellent, Gary. Like I say, brilliant.
I'm nodding.
Just brilliant. We're all nodding. And you're right. You are right. It's not about just the big clubs. You're right that, you know, the smaller clubs are just as important. But again, we've obviously worked together. We know we work together far too much, Gary. And you link there. So obviously, Emma, you know, last year Champions League final.
Yeah.
You know, and I suppose, you know, a fantastic opportunity, I guess, to contribute, you know, to make a major contribution to what it is that you're trying to do.
Yeah, it was very last minute and it was very unplanned. But I think a few days before we kind of knew that most of the fans were making their way to Madrid, I suddenly was like, I'm just going to tweet. If anybody can get hold of a disposable camera, can you just take one with you? I even phoned up Liverpool Airport just to see if the boots in there had disposable cameras, just so that I could let people know that they were you could get them from the airport. And we didn't. When I say we, me and my husband, because my husband helped me out with Red, we didn't know if anybody would take it up. But actually, as the days sort of went on, we were getting photos saying, I've got my camera. And so we had 10 fans send cameras back. And there was no expectation at the time, but when they came back and I got them developed, and they were just amazing. And we were just like, well, we need to do something with this. And the good thing is kind of my photography career has helped massively, because I've worked for an arts organisation, actually, in the Black Country, so not far from Walsall, called Multistory. And they have just done a big sort of exhibition called Blast, which was photography exhibitions with the community, but out in the community, so that, like, on bus shelters and in libraries and just, you know, amongst just everyday sort of goings on. And so I was like, that's what we should do with Madrid. And so I contacted Hotel Tia and said, would it be okay in like a few months time we put some of these photos in your garden on the kind of fence running alongside the garden? And they were like, yeah, but the season starts in like a month, so do you think you could maybe do it for there? And I was like, oh, okay. So we ended up with an exhibition of sort of 50 photos from 10 fans. And then we had a launch, which went really well. About 60 people came. George Sefton turned up. And actually the fans that took the photos, a few of those actually managed to come along as well, because they were from all over the country. And just seeing them see their photo in an exhibition, there's literally nothing like it. It's the best feeling in the world. And I think that's when I realised that it's not just about looking backwards and resurrecting old photos. This is about how we work with current fans, whatever age, and sort of create projects and ways for them to get involved, to give ownership to them, to sort of just create engagement and for them to have sort of something that's artistic, creative. You know, many of these guys were kind of like, I haven't done anything like this for years. They said they really enjoyed it when they were out there. It was like having a little challenge. And they were just dead proud of seeing their work. They were the artists. It was just phenomenal. So we're planning on doing more, looking at if there's a bus parade.
I think it's probably safe to say that there should be at least one.
If there's not, I'm going to take a bus around the country with like dentine chewing gum wearing on the bar. And so we might look at giving fans disposable cameras out in the crowd. We'd really like to work with groups of fans on sort of projects. Because the other thing that we're really aware of, I follow a lot of fans on Twitter now, and I'll be honest, there's a lot of people really struggling in terms of mental health right now, and in terms of loneliness and isolation and just not knowing who to talk to or having someone to talk to, particularly with men, and particularly with men of a certain age. And I just want to give as many opportunities for people to maybe get involved with something, maybe have something creative to do, maybe to be able to share how they feel or their story or something related to football, but we can work on that and see where they want to take it. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're heading to as well.
Wow. Can I just ask as well? I'm really sorry. In terms of the club, because all I can think there is how you could get a disposable camera onto the bus and have images coming off the bus and onto the crowd.
And now I've thought about this, and apparently there's the media bus, like the second one. And so, like, this is the Anfield Rap were kind of saying, just get on the media bus, like, you get on the media bus. And I was like, oh, I don't know. But, it would be really nice because it would be like a conversation. So you'd have both sides. So it would be, well, I'll see what I can do.
if you get it, don't turn down that opportunity, whatever you do. I can't tell you how mad I'd be with you. Obviously, you know, Stephen, like I say, you know, we keep coming back to this, and I suppose, you know, this season, you know, as we chatted at the beginning, and I'm not saying, and Gary's absolutely right, it's not about big clubs, little clubs, it's not that one season is more important than another, but this season, you know, like I say, you as a Liverpool fan, Stephen, this is a season that does need recording in an age of digital cameras, phones, you know, even disposable cameras seem quite modern. Certainly, even to my mum, they seem quite modern. But I suppose what I'm saying, Stephen, is, you know, this needs capturing. This period under Jurgen Klopp, this bringing together of Liverpool Football Club, you know, it does need capturing, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. You know, it's a proper eye of the storm moment, and, you know, to get, you know, an image that no one else... I mean, every image is kind of like the personal perspective of that person. You know, there is no other photo of that angle, you know, or of that view that's being seen. And they're all just massively invaluable because they're just, a moment in time where something massive is happening. And it really does need kind of like... It needs capture.
And it's funny because some people have said to me, like, oh, well, I've got tons of iPhone photos that I can send you. And I just feel like there's a different... We treat film photography, we treat physical, tangible photos in a completely different way. Usually we need less of them to sort of give us the same impact. But also they are treasured. They are, and in this sort of day and age where so little can be often treasured because it... Everything is instant, throwaway, replaceable. And I just think this project had to be in that way. Otherwise, it wouldn't have felt the same. And I think that's what it is. It's about feeling. And it's all about feel.
No, go on. Sorry, I'll just ask you, Gary. Stephen made a great point where people who don't get football, and everybody that I live with doesn't get football. My mum doesn't get football. Nobody gets football that I live with, which is why I talk to you two guys all the time. But do you think that, you know, I'm not saying football's the best medium for this, but to me, football is something that can capture young, old, rich, poor, any race, any religion. It's probably the single... I suppose the arts would be there as well, perhaps music as well, I suppose, you know, could be in there as well. But it is one of the biggest common denominators or common factors that people can bond around.
It definitely is, buddy, definitely. You know, as I've mentioned in podcasts we've done in the past, you know, my wife's a Wolves fan, and, you know, fanatical Wolves fan, was a season ticket holder for many years. And she sort of rants about the fact that only since we came out to live in Spain that Wolves have become successful again. but you know, I'm gonna pull a quote out of the air here, and I'm gonna quote Bart Simpson, that philosopher of life and all things that are important. And Bart Simpson says that you don't want to be a member of the MTV generation because they know neither highs nor lows. Football fans are not members of the MTV generation. Because, you know, Steve mentioned this a bit earlier, you know, we know those exhilarating highs, we know those gut-wrenching lows when your team loses or concedes or gets eliminated from a tournament or whatever. And, you know, if football's about anything, football's about emotion. And, you know, before we sort of came on in, I was looking at Emma's photos of on the Red Project, and all those pictures, almost with an exception, some of them are buildings, but most of them are full of people with emotion. They're doing something that they love. They're doing something that is part of their life. It's not important. It's an important part of their life. It's almost a primeval part of their life that shapes that. You know, you go to work on a Monday morning. If your team's won, you're happy. If your team's lost, you're sad. If your team played well and lost, you're still bloody sad because they're lost. But you know, football is important. Is important in so many ways to people who watch the game, and those that don't understand football, I just feel a little bit sad for them because they don't understand the joys and they never understand the lows. If you don't know the lows, you don't know the highs.
That's excellent. You see, obviously, as a Hull City fan, I know a lot of lows. There have been the odd high, I am aware. I just feel like they've not been evenly shared out. So I just assume that mine are just coming soon.
Nobody
just
said it's going to be fair, Stu. Nobody said it was going to be fair.
Yeah, that's it. Emma, I know this is, and like I said, I'm not from Merseyside, I'm not from Liverpool, so this might be a wholly inappropriate, and some people might even switch off from listening to this podcast in a second, and I am really sorry if they are. But is there a temptation to embrace the whole, and I'm really sorry for saying this, Stephen, is there a temptation to embrace the whole of Merseyside with this project, or is that something that wouldn't, couldn't, and that's probably my own ignorance from not living in a two-team city.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's interesting. We've had a few sort of things that have come up in terms of the two teams. I think I spoke to somebody from a museum who was maybe interested in the archive, but then was kind of like, can't you do both teams? You know, that would be really helpful. And for me, I probably wouldn't necessarily do the archive for both teams, but we did a pilot sort of memory session with a dementia group. And walking into the group, we obviously didn't know who was a football fan, who was a red, who was a blue. And it turns out half of us were blue. And so there was a lot of banter and there was quite a bit of booing, but like joke booing. Yeah. And we had photos, we'd brought photos, and luckily a couple of photos were sort of derby games, and so it felt okay, but actually the feedback at the end was we'd really like some more derby photos and maybe put in a bit of Everton stuff as well, and actually that would be wonderful. You know, like, it's weird, the sort of the rivalry between the Bournemouth and Southampton sort of rivalry, and it feels different. Like, yes, sometimes I might get into trouble for this. With Liverpool and Everton, yes, it runs really, really, really deep. But when I see things like fans supporting food banks and the fact that both red and blue are coming together to do that, you know, actually when it comes to it and there's a real issue and something that really needs, you know, you need to get behind, the whole city, it doesn't matter. And so, for me, that shines brighter than the issues when one of them loses against the other kind of thing. So to me, I think it's more of a special relationship between the two. And I think there's probably a lot more love there than hate.
It's funny because obviously, you know, you talked about, you know, things like mental health and dementia and those sorts of things. And obviously, from an outsider looking in, you know, it seems to me, and as you've just said there, that, you know, how can you take this around Merseyside, and, you know, where you've got families, married couples, and to me it would seem difficult, not to exclude, because you never would exclude, but it would just seem a natural thing that in Merseyside in particular, as you've just said, football overrules everything. When it actually really comes to it, the city of Merseyside will always put its people before the teams. Now, I might be wrong there, and you know, and you and Stephen will know far better than me, but that's certainly how it comes across to me.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the food bank, the fan supporting food banks, I think their whole slogan is like, things like that don't have club colours, you know, like food poverty, mental health, dementia, you know, it doesn't care who it strikes. So I think that's where the city is strongest, I think.
Okay. I mean, obviously, Stephen, you know, yourself, you know, like I said, you know, you're massive Liverpool fans, supported all your life. I've never asked, to be fair. I can't believe I haven't asked. Are there Everton fans within your family, your close network?
Yeah, my uncle. I've got an uncle. I've got cousins that are blue. I mean, luckily enough, you know, my dad's red, my brother's red, you know, my mum and my dad, my mum and my sister, you know, nominal reds because we're red.
My cousin has an Everton Christmas tree.
that's the thing about Everton. You often see kind of like the Santa dashes and stuff like that at Christmas, kind of like the 10Ks or the walks, charity and all that type of stuff. And there's always a few blue Santas, blue and white Santas, because they can't wear red and white. But the great thing about Liverpool and Everton is, yes, we will kind of like rile against each other, but it's a proper sibling rivalry, because what it is a lot, I class myself as one of these, that I'm a fair Liverpool supporter, is that I have no problem with Everton if Everton were to be successful, as long as they weren't quite as successful as Liverpool. Just be an octave or two lower and that would be fine. But what we'll do is that we will point at each other, we will shake a comedy fist and try and drag each other down. But at the same time, if anyone from the outside looking in, yeah, as a pop at the other side, then we stand up for the other, you know, and when push comes to shove, it's kind of like we're all the same, you know. Yes, we might support a different team, but, you know, when push comes to shove, if you attack one, you attack all.
I mean, obviously, Gary, you know, Birmingham, I'm not saying Birmingham's a bigger city, there's more sides, there's more clubs. I'm just asking how... Is that same? Could you get away with that in Birmingham?
Well, not being from Birmingham.
I apologise. I'm so sorry. My job is awful. I apologise for my assumptions. I'm going to give you
a sort of similar example here, because I mentioned my wife's a Wolves fan, and the rivalry between the Wolves and West Bromwich Albion, not too far away from Sandwell Project, where Emma did some work. That's not nice. That's proper bitter and unremittingly, not hatred, but yeah, far short. But there's this a similar thing. We just listened to Emma and Steve talk about Liverpool Everton situation. I was up in Bilbao a while ago talking to Dan Perry, who's obviously in these football times as well, who lives up there and just married a Basque girl in Bilbao. And I asked him about the rivalry between Athletic Club and Real Sociedad. And he said it's not like a harsh rivalry, it's like their cousins who both want to win. But a bit like Steve, you said, when you're attacked from the outside, you stick together. And that might be a fairly sort of... obviously, you can't be fairly unique. It's a ridiculous thing, Gary. You're by mistake, you're unique or you're not. But a sort of a different situation, because of the Basque country and the nationalism within that area. But, you know, there's probably a similar situation in Liverpool as well, where... You know, that's that cousins and, you know, metaphorically and almost familial, as Steve mentioned there, that it's a rivalry, but it's not hatred. It's a competitive thing, but it's not vile. And those two things can be mutually compatible. You know, you can have rivalries that are not nice, and you can have rivalries that are okay, and you both want to win, but you don't hate each other. I think Liverpool thing and Everton is very much the latter, but things like, as I mentioned, the Wolves and the Baggies in the Midlands are very much the former. So there's a massive difference in rivalry, and it's difficult for me to comprehend, because, you know, as a Chelsea fan, you know, we haven't got no local rivalries other than, I suppose, Fulham, but, you know, whatever. You know, probably our biggest rivalry is Tottenham, you know. We did the double album this year. That was wonderful. But it's not really that important, you know. It's just the points. And I think I almost miss that, not having a local rivalry. You know, my wife celebrates massively when Wolves beats the Baggies, and she wants them to get promoted this season so they can get back in the Premiership, because she says, I want the 6 points.
Emma, like I say, we've already taken up an hour of your time already, and I'm sure we could take up another time, another hour as well. Like I say, it is absolutely fascinating. For me, football gets a lot of bad press, sometimes justified, sometimes not. But I also think football, you know, has so much to offer, so much to offer people in lots of different ways. But in terms of obviously getting involved, you know, hopefully people have listened to this and thought, I would like my club to do it, or I'd like to access what you're doing, I'd like to contribute to what you're doing. I suppose, you know, how do or how can people get involved? You know, can they help you with this in any way?
Yeah, we have a website. So the website's www.redportraits.com. I'm also on Twitter, so Emma Case on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook with the Red Project as well, and Instagram, red_portraits. And on the website, you can upload your own photos or you can email them over. You can email us if you want to get involved from a volunteer perspective, or if you want, if you know somebody that might be a good person to be interviewed. But we're launching a crowdfunder on Monday. So this is the biggie, because this has been going on for like 3 years, and we had a couple of businesses help us out with paying for the exhibition, the Madrid exhibition last year. But apart from that, it's been completely self-funded. And so we've taken a massive gamble. we've jumped in with both feet. And so the crowdfunder starts on Monday and it runs for a month. And I'm not sure when this will go out. So it'll be for the whole of March. And we need to hit our target. If we don't reach our target, we get zero. And so we're looking for supporters to pledge. We have loads of rewards like merchandise and experiences like breakfast with my dad. You can have a fry up with Jimmy. And then hopefully we'll reach the target and then we'll be able to sort of really go for it. And also businesses. We're kind of looking for kind of business sponsorship as well to get all these sort of projects being able to be off the ground and kind of keep them going. So yeah, that's probably the best way for you guys to get involved. But yeah, just email if you've got a question or anything, just get in touch.
Brilliant. With regards to when it goes out now, as soon as we've finished, I'll make sure this is edited as quick. Well, it's not going to need edited at the moment. Just get it sent across. I'm sure Stephen will be able to put the squeeze on Omar and be like, we need to get this out as quick as we can.
Well, that's okay. Well, it goes live on the 2nd of March and finishes on like the 2nd of April. So I'm hoping.
Oh, okay. No problem.
Manage to win enough games so that mid-March we are kind of champions of everything, and Thunder will go mad.
So you're looking for a lot of drunken donations, right?
Yeah, that's what we're hoping.
Just the club on Mars that are going to dispute that you're not champions of everything.
You know, obviously, Stephen, you know, Liverpool fan. You know, I'm not saying the final word is with you, because obviously we'll leave it with Emma. But you know, this is your club. You know, your club. You know, far more. Certainly, it's not mine. You know, Gary's a Chelsea fan, but you know, this is your club. I guess you must be. I don't know. I wanted to say proud, but that's probably not the right word. But I suppose grateful for what Emma's doing and what the people who've helped Emma do this, I suppose it must be great as a Liverpool fan. It must be great knowing that this is all in place.
Oh no, it's brilliant, and proud's the right word, because it's you know, that sense of community and that sense of humanity, and that just strikes a massive chord. And I am proud, and I think Emma's doing an absolutely fantastic thing. And you know, I wish it every success.
Gary, do you wish Emma was a Chelsea fan?
I wish everybody was a Chelsea fan.
I wish I was a Chelsea fan.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, you know, I can only echo what Stevie said. You know, Emma's doing a wonderful job there, and to have the opportunity to hold people's memories in your hands must be a humbling thing to do, and to be able to preserve them and share them with other like-minded people is a wonderful thing. So yes, I wish everyone was a Chelsea fan and would do it for my club. There's probably somebody doing it. I hope there's somebody doing it to my club. You know, if there isn't, there should be, and there should be somebody doing it to every club up and down the country, and be them Liverpool, be them Accrington Stanley. No offence to Accrington Stanley or Bishop Auckland or Club Deportivo Torrevieja, which is 300 yards up the road from our apartment here. But it's a wonderful thing, and more power to you, mate. More power to you.
I suppose, you know, obviously you've done so much and it seems quite churlish to ask, but is there, you know, obviously you've talked about this season and, you know, and the parade and that sort of thing, but I suppose, you know, the last thing to ask, you know, long term, is there anything that you've not done yet that you would like to do, anything that maybe seems too big but one day you hope is possible, or any real target that you would ultimately sort of set yourself for this?
100%, yeah. We spent a little while, probably about a year, trying to secure a derelict shop opposite the ground. So there was the Anfield Pharmacy, which is pretty much two doors down from Home Baked Bakery. It's right literally in the shadow of Anfield, and it's currently just not used, and we'd love to take that over as sort of like a communal community space, so we can have exhibitions in there, workshops, events, and just share the archive. And it, there's only so much room that one person can kind of like move forward, and at one point I had to sort of just save my energy and concentrate basically on the caravan so that I knew that I could push it forward, because you know, you're dealing with councils and all sorts, but I think that's probably the next step. But what I did want to just say is that the biggest thing for me of this whole project is we've moved back to Liverpool for this. So we were in Birmingham and I've come home. Like, that's how it feels. And although the project is for everybody else and for the fans, they are giving so much to me personally. I get treated like I am their family instantly. Like, if I speak to a fan outside Anfield, they're like, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want a pie? You know, tell your dad he's doing fine. You know, I even had a taxi driver the other day. I was going into a meeting and he was shouting after me, go ahead, girl, go on, do it. I had a really important meeting about it. I'm talking about it with fans, and they are taking me like into their hearts. And literally, I just cannot thank them enough. I feel very welcome. I feel totally at home.
I've only spoken to you for an hour and 10 minutes, and I can see how Liverpool fans have bought into this, bought into what you're doing. Certainly, you know, the passion that just comes through in your voice. And again, you know, the three of us, you know, we have various podcast series and things that we do. And really the common reason why we do them is to listen to other people, listen to the passion in other people's voices about whatever the aspect of the game is, either that we're talking about or that they believe in. And it just comes across in waves in what you're saying. And I kind of understand why Liverpool or Liverpool Football Club have, like you say, have taken you to your heart just by listening to you, let alone seeing the things that you're doing and planning to do for the club and for the people of Liverpool, I guess.
That really means a lot. Thanks. Thank you.
It's all right. Stephen, any final thoughts?
Mushy messes.
Sorry, say that again.
Am I turning you all into mushy messes?
Yeah. Yeah. Even my mum might listen to this one. Stephen, any final thoughts?
Oh, just to echo everything that's been said over the last hour or so. It's you know, a wonderful thing, and you know, if I think one of the great things is if someone's listening to this that's inspired to go and do something similar for another football team or just in any kind of capacity. You know, if you think you can do something and there's something holding you back, don't let it. Just go out there and do it.
Yeah, 100%.
Gary, final thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I'd agree with exactly what Stevie just said of while we're talking there. I've just followed Emma on Twitter, so hopefully you'll follow me back, Emma. And I'll keep an eye on your project. And as I said to you know earlier, you know, more power to you, mate, and more power to anybody who does those sort of things. The memories of football are precious, and we shouldn't lose them. So thanks, mate.
Thank you.
Yeah, Emma, it's been an absolute privilege to be sort of let into your world, which seems like the best place. It just whether it's because of how well Liverpool are doing, whether it's just because of how much you believe in what you're doing, I don't know. But it seems like a great place, and for the last hour and 10 minutes, I've fully bought into, even if I haven't already, fully bought into what it is that you're trying to do. Hopefully, you know, the people who are listening to this, have listened to it, will help you, support you where they can. You know, hopefully they can contribute, even if it's just a little bit. I'm sure every little bit will help you reach your target. And I'm sure that after listening to this and, you know, looking at some of your stuff online, etc., that, you know, I'm sure they're willing to contribute. And like you say, if you can get the league sewn up inside the next 4 games... there's no excuses, is there?
No.
But yeah, thank you so much for your time, and really thanks for the passion. I think it's been brilliant. All that's left for me to say is obviously thank you to the guys for joining me once again. Thank you to Emma, like I say, for sharing everything, and obviously thank you for listening, and please join us again next time on the Lob Podcast with These Football Times. Thank you and goodbye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.